Welcome to the inaugural show zero of the Babylon Podcast. My name is Summer Brooks.
I'm going to put that on, go into the spot factory and get to work.
My dog and I are being attacked by a duck.
I think I'm kidding, but I'm not.
When you're hungry, you're hungry.
The Virgin sits on a crate, opening and closing his pipe.
Steph has a mind of its own tonight.
I didn't get any entries at all.
Telepaths against mundanes is no contest.
I like Day of the Dead.
I did too.
Hey guys, it's Gary. I'm listening to episode 1.
God help us all. This is Joe Truman.
Production of the malt liquor beverage Zima.
Nice and close. And I looked at him and I go, do you want?
Hey there. Okay. Actually, let me call you back in a minute. Bye.
Stella, I knew it was a bad idea to record. I knew it was.
And welcome back to another Babylon podcast. I'm Summer Brooks.
I am Tim Callender.
And we're having fun.
Yeah, we are.
And we're going to have fun even though Brett bailed on us, so there.
That Brett. We don't need him anyways.
You know why he didn't show up?
No, why?
Because people have not been sending voicemails directly to him yet.
Oh, is that what the problem is?
I believe it
may be. If
that's
all it took, good God.
So I think we should encourage some of the new B5 people I've been tweeting with to call in and show Brett some love so he won't be so easily inclined to diss us in the future.
Yeah.
That's my story and I'm sticking to it.
That sounds like a good thing. Hey, I got some news here. I want to open the show with. We got an email and a voicemail from two listeners in Australia, Alex and Danny, who both attended the Armageddon Sci-Fi Convention in Adelaide. And Alex mentioned that JMS called in on a Skype call, and Pat Tallman was a guest there, and. Yeah. Danny sent in a voicemail about that. So, Mike, can you play that voicemail? Because I think everyone will find this very intriguing.
Hi, Babylon podcasters. It's Danny from Adelaide, Australia. I was lucky enough to attend Armageddon Expo this weekend, and Patricia Tallman was one of the guests. She was vibrant and friendly and great to listen to, and I'd like to share some of the stories and gossip with all of you. Of course, Pat talked about her experience on Babylon 5 and other projects. She also related a fun anecdote from when she was Corpse of the Week on Castle, telling us how nice Nathan Fillion and Stana Katic are in real life. The big bonus of the day came with a 15-minute Skype call with Joe Straczynski. He answered lots of fan questions, but I figured I'd focus on the new information for the listeners. First up, Joe's script about Harry Houdini and Arthur Conan Doyle was submitted to DreamWorks on a Friday and bought on the following Monday for $2 million. This never happens in Hollywood. They are also fast-tracking it into production this year, so it should be out next year. Joe said the script is based on about 60% fact, Houdini and Conan Doyle's relationship, and 40% fiction, the murder mystery plot that binds the film together. No casting information yet, but Joe would love Colin Firth to play Conan Doyle. Secondly, Joe spoke about Babylon 5's future after The Lost Tales. He says that he told the studio, and I'll quote, "No, look. If you want a big-budget feature film or a new series where I have complete creative control, call me. Until then, don't bother me." Oddly enough, the phone rang late last year. There is movement in the tall grass. Can't tell you what it is yet, but there's something going on. There'll be more news in April. Now, Forbidden Planet. The script is with Warner Brothers, and they still want to make it, but they need to find the right director. James Cameron wanted to do it, but he dropped out due to needing to work on Avatar and its sequels. Someone asked what the apocalypse box on Crusade was. Joe cryptically answered that it was a prison containing the entity that the box contained. The plan was, at the end of the season, Gideon was going to have been shot, and his consciousness would travel into the box together with whatever was in the box. He unfortunately didn't give us any more information than this, so we can still keep wondering. And the wonderful news is that Pat Tallman will be working on a new project with Joe soon, which he is writing and producing, and she will also be learning production from him. They couldn't give us any details about it yet, but when these details can be made public, you should definitely get Pat back on the podcast to talk about it. Hope this news is of interest to you. Be seeing you.
Wow.
Yeah, how about that? Thanks, Danny, for that report. And thanks, Alex, also for emailing in with that your information about that, too. Yeah, it's real intriguing. April, huh? That's not too far away.
No, just a few short weeks away. And oh, man, now you got me looking forward to stuff. Dude.
I just hope it's, you know, something a little more solid than more teasing about we've been in conversation. You know,
well, if they're putting up real money to the point where he did answer the phone and speak to them, I would have to guess that it would, you know,
I guess I hope
because, you know, he did say, unless you're talking real money, don't call me. And then they called him. And you know how stubborn, you know, rumor has it that he can be.
Yep.
So they must have thrown out a number that got his attention, which bodes well for all of us, right?
Well, okay. I don't know. I guess what I'm trying to say is, as a fan of B5, I've kind of reached the point where I'm leery of any announcement because of the way Warner seems to treat us as fans.
Okay. So basically what you're saying is you're tired of being teased by Warner Brother in the same way that Browncoats wishes Fox would tease them. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. Well, they've got to go through their trial by fire too.
Mm-hmm. You're getting
and I
there.
Know, you know, they only had 18 episodes, so whatever.
13. Not that I'm counting.
Whatever.
So, yeah. I don't mind. Because even the slightest little buzz, even if it's a rumor that dies out after 3 or 4 months, it keeps Babylon 5 in the forefront. And that drives curious people to say, hey, what's this Babylon 5 thing? Let me check it out. And if it brings more and more people to Babylon 5, you know, fresh eyes, fresh minds, I'm good with that.
No, I'm with you. I mean, I agree there. There's no doubt, but I don't know. Maybe they're going to announce the long-awaited B5 Lensman crossover series.
And what's the over-under on that?
And everybody drink.
Everybody take a shot. Okay. Well, we will continue to dream about the possibilities, even possibly talk them into the mud later on once we get whatever next bit of news is in April. But right now we're going to take a quick break and come back with the rest of the voicemails we have piled up.
Yeah.
I'm Michael R. Menengate.
I'm Summer Brooks.
I'm Michael Stackpole.
And I'm Brian Brown.
Join us for an exciting romp through literature and books.
Romp? We're not romping.
We're supposed to be cool.
That's smooth. Right.
Okay.
It's the cool.
It's the smoothing sounds.
The smoothing sounds.
I don't know, but romp just brings forth images of Michael in tights, and I'm so not going there.
Well, which Michael?
It doesn't matter. Neither one would be very good.
If you would like to join this thing that we do every week, it's called Dragon Page, cover to cover.
Take two. Welcome to Dragon Page, cover to cover, where the elite meet to discuss literature. Okay, let's go back to the tight images. Yeah.
Dragon Page, cover to cover, where you'll never know what you're going to get next. Ah, voicemails.
Yeah, we've got them. You want them? We got them.
Yes.
So let's just jump into it, because otherwise Mike's going to start complaining about how long we're taking.
I need friends.
Hello, Babylon Podcast. This is Father Beast from Sandy, Utah. I'm calling to tell you my favorite 5 episodes of Babylon 5. First up, in chronological order, is The Quality of Mercy from Season 1. this doesn't have a whole lot to do with the overall arc, but every moment with Londo and Lanier is just pure gold. And the scene where she turns the machine on the murderer is awesome. I like how it turned out that she had lost her license to practice medicine because she'd been hooked on stims, which is something that came back to bite Dr. Franklin later on. It was a sort of foreshadowing there. Second one is, and now for a word from season 2, 36 hours on Babylon 5, as I like to call it. The news report, ISN, this was great because it didn't break character the whole episode. The entire show, it looked like it was just a documentary. If you're looking for an episode to start somebody out on, I would pick this one because it shows everybody from the outside. Number 3 from season 3, Severed Dreams. Okay, that's a no-brainer. Who doesn't have that on their top 5 list? So much happened in this episode. Breaking from Earth, the breaking of the Grey Council. Oh, the ISN went black. Oh my gosh. Number 4, also from season 3, we have Shadow Dancing, the next second to last episode of the season. We have this is the one where we had the first big battle with the shadows, where we basically proved that Sheridan's alliance could work. And what seems to be more important to me was Dr. Franklin finds himself while on walkabout. I've never seen anything like that. Somebody else may have done something like that, but usually spiritual experiences is the person you meet isn't yourself. It may look like you, but it's just representing like an angel or something, like Jakar's vision in Dust to Dust. So, and this is just stark, face yourself and be judged. And the fifth and last one is from season 4, and thanks to Straczynski's terrible naming protocols, I can't remember whether it's The Long Dark or The Long Night or The Dark Night or The Long Night of the Dark or something. Anyway, it's the one that's the next to last episode of The Shadow War. The one right before Into the Fire. This is the one where they sent that ranger off to die so we could invite the shadows to our big party. And the attention when they end the episode and everybody's leaving they hear the voiceover by Captain Sheridan going, "This is my last entry as commander of Babylon 5, you know, and here we find out whether all our bets are good." Now I know that I didn't have anything from season 5 in there, and I know I didn't have the ever classic Sleeping in Light, but I basically did this on one criterion: how much do I want to watch these episodes? And that's where that falls out in that criterion.
That's a good list.
Yeah, it is a good list, and his criteria is an excellent criterion. How much do you want to watch him again?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, Severed Dreams is probably my top 2 that I watch. Like, if I just want to watch a random episode,
right.
Severed Dreams is probably the first one I go to. That's why my case for season 3 is falling apart. No, it literally, it is cracked.
Oh, your case. I got you. Yes, your case.
Yeah, the DVD case for my copy of season 3 is cracked. One of the little plastic trays that holds the DVD in came completely out.
Oh my god!
Yeah, so I have to be careful whenever I grab that one out there. So yeah, it's a little bit, it's well worn. It's loved and well used, and it's gotten a lot of use over the years. And
to borrow from the Velveteen Rabbit, it's probably become real.
Yes.
Hello, this is Neil from Bowie, listening to show 221.
Hi, Neil.
Where Tim's talking about best of the best Babylon 5 episodes versus personal favorite. And I think the distinction is that when you're looking for a set of best Babylon 5 episodes, that is a list that everyone actually supposed to agree on that these are the best episodes of the show. Yeah. Well, personal favorites are obviously personal favorites to an individual person, episodes that mean something special to him, but might not mean as much to some other viewers. That's all.
Yeah, and I'd like to see, Neil, if you can get five B5 fans in a room and have them all agree on five top episodes,
mm-hmm.
you then would probably be Lorian at that point.
That's worse than getting Star Trek fans to agree on a, you know, one favorite episode from each of the series. Never going to happen.
Oh, yeah, right, exactly, exactly. And that's why, I mean, that's one of the reasons we had to take Sleeping Late off the list. That was just put up on its own little pedestal there because that one was too easy, but the rest of it
mean we had some variations among our list, but there are, like, I'm gonna say five episodes that we all considered no-brainers in the top 10 that we're like, okay, we're not gonna include those because those are the ones most B5 fans would
right.
would agree on. So right. we went
but
with
even
our
with that, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Yeah. I mean to look at Father Beast list, I'm not sure I'd put Quality of Mercy onto my list. I enjoyed it, don't get me wrong, but not a top five. Not for me.
Top five, no. But it's one that I would watch again easily.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, this is Neil from Boy listening to show 222, where Tim's talking about the situation of Crusade on TNT, and I think he has most of the story correct there with the carryover audience, or the lack thereof, disappointing TNT. But, I mean, the key thing is the ratings for Crusade meant nothing, basically, because they killed Crusade before it even aired. I mean, So it was dead upon arrival. So it was a real sad case there.
Yep.
That's all.
I don't recall if I was aware that the show had been canceled by the time the first episode had aired, but I think I knew by the third or fourth episode that they were just burning them out just to air them and be done with them.
See, my recollection is that it hadn't been canceled. This is really what I remember. And maybe I'm just dense and didn't pick up on it, but I remember the whole, it was in production. They stopped as they revamped the costumes, got notes in from TNT. Hence the really cool uniforms in the first batch of episodes, the bellhop uniforms in the middle batch. But I don't recall getting this sense that it had been canceled until a few episodes before the axe actually fell. I don't recall, while it was in production, hearing that it had been canceled before it was produced, or aired, rather. You know, I was aware there was trouble in the production, but not that it had been, you know, throttled in the cradle, as it were.
Well, this is Neil from Bowie. Summer was asking about how people felt about the cancellation crusade and so forth, and do admit that it was, at least those of us who were in the following along in the Usenet moderated B5 news group, it was a pretty big blow. But then, on the other hand, it was on TNT, and there's a smaller audience available to TNT. I myself didn't even get TNT in my cable package at the time, and had to borrow, send out VHS tapes to a coworker who got me the last season of B5 and Crusade when they aired, and exchanging those tapes all that time. So, anyway, that's it for the moment.
That's funny. That's almost the exact opposite of most everybody else's experience. Trying to find B5 through the first 4 years, not knowing where it was, but once it hit TNT, it's like, oh, I know exactly what channel it's on. I know exactly what time it's airing.
Hi, Babylon Podcast. This is Colin from San Marcos again. I was watching episode 2 of season 1, Soul Hunter, when I realized something really weird. The way the Soul Hunter describes the process of taking Delenn's soul is oddly similar to what Lorien promised Sheridan when Sheridan was expressing his fear of dying to Lorien. In the extended Babylon 5 lore, is there any connection between the Soul Hunters and Lorien, or the Soul Hunters and the older species? When the Soul Hunter told Delenn, "I will catch you if you will fall," it was really damn peculiar. Anyway, thank you.
Wow, that's, you know, I had never quite made that connection. Excellent. Thank you for that. I've never read anything that specifies the origin of the Soul Hunters. And now, you know, if you, Lorien is the first one from which all races in the galaxy sprang. So by extension, the Soul Hunters are related, but that's, you know, that's kind of semantics. I mean, there's no indication that there's a more direct lineage. That makes sense. I mean, there's nothing there one way or the other. Ugh, boy, that would be a cool. I'd love to see that. Forget your telepath war. Let me see more Soul Hunters.
Soul Hunter trilogy. That could be interesting.
Yeah, I'm up for that.
Oh, geez, guys, I dialed you by accident. I mean, to talk to you, I meant to actually call somebody else. But why waste the phone call? I'm curious, did anybody feel that Dr. Chambers was not used enough? I would have loved to have seen an episode where she actually, you know, sort of had more action of her own rather than just this little supporting role. Well, that's my 2 cents for right now, guys. Sorry I dialed by accident, but I figured I'd contribute nonetheless. Bye.
Yeah, not as sorry as us.
That's funny.
Well, you know, the next episode that's up for us to deep geek on, Patterns of the Soul, Dr. Chambers plays a bigger role.
Mm-hmm.
But see, I get the sense that everybody didn't get enough time, you know, that too much of it was just set up and, you know, other than the obvious Gideon and really, Galen, you know, they all could have used more. They were all characters waiting to really be developed, you know?
We needed more episodes, plain and simple.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Hey, Badcasters, it's Gary, and I have some hot-off-the-presses news, or at least it's hot-off-the-presses when I'm calling you about it. It was leaked yesterday, Tuesday, at least for my reckoning, that JMS had written a treatment for Repent Harlequin, the Harlan Ellison story. Rather than let idle speculation go by, JMS chimed in on his Facebook page confirming that, number one, it's true, number two, Harlan has approved it, and they're shopping, I guess, for, you know, people to spend money on it, i.e. producers and directors at this point. But in this project, I would consider getting Harlan's approval probably the biggest hurdle, and since that's done, hopefully we'll see something come of it. So that's my little non-B5 but related news. I'll talk to you later, guys. Bye.
Gary, I'll have to disagree with you on this one. I think knowing the relationship between Harlan and JMS, that would have been a relatively straightforward thing. I think it's going to be how do you pitch something like that to a studio and make it compelling? Now, maybe if it's a small studio and they do it as a, like an indie film, you know, maybe there's some traction there, a smaller studio that would take a chance on an offbeat project. But I don't know, maybe Michael Bay would agree to direct it. They could call it Explode Harlequin, said the TikTok man.
Don't. There are two names I never, ever, ever want to hear whispered anywhere near the feature film adaptation of this movie.
Yeah.
Michael Bay is one.
Okay.
Uwe Boll is another.
Oh.
All right. I'm sorry. We could probably put James Cameron on that list, too.
I was waiting for that one. Well, you could do it in 3D.
I'm going to hurt somebody. Just don't do it. No.
Hi, this is the Hated Bunny for the Babylon podcast. I just wanted to point out that, what was it, the Memories of War, I think is the title of the episode, where they had one technomage manage to kill the population of an entire planet. And I was thinking that if one technomage could do that, then an entire, like the Vorlons, should be able to create something like in Day of the Dead, where they could have all that technology that looked like magic, like they said, you know, future enough technology would look like magic. And so I think the Vorlon Empire could carry out something like that when just one technomage can kill off the planet. So, thank you.
Was there a question in there?
No, I think he was just making a statement.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's, I mean, again, I've said this before, the Technomage trilogy written by Gene Cavellos does a really good job of showing the trade-off between the power and the curse that it is to be a Technomage, which you never really get on either Babylon 5 or Crusade. Although, again, only having 13 episodes or whatever Crusade, you know, it makes you wonder what more we would have seen of Galen's story had time gone on.
Hello, this is Nelson Bowie-Luke listening to the end of show 220 with the CGI model debate. And I think I agree with everybody there. Some great models out there. It's good to test the time. And there's some very impressive CGI there. Well, and I really, really, really would love to see Babylon 5 fully rendered again in HD with new CGI based on what we originally had there. Oh, that would be so great. But that's not going to happen. Anyway, that's all. Mm-hmm.
You are a Trek fan, correct?
Me, yes.
All right. Do you know how much money Paramount put in to upgrading the effects on that last round of the original Star Trek?
I don't. You know what? I can take a. I'll do a little quick Googling over the break. I know it was done by Foundation, and I'm sure that, you know, they got what they were worth. But, you know, no, I won't even make a guess.
Yeah.
You know, the other part of it is too that what they did, here's one caveat to that in terms of whatever they spent on it, is that they just did the visual effects for starships. They did some revamping for matte paintings, you know, if you've got like a cityscape or something. But really, the majority of it, in essence, they replaced footage. It wasn't like they were going into shots of characters and doing a lot of effects work, which I think would have been more difficult and time-consuming and expensive. You know, it's like we got better spaceships. So I'm sure Gary or the Jason Davis will prove me wrong. But, you know, from the ones that I saw, it was, you know, they made it look better. They replaced the visual effects, but that's really the bulk of it.
Yeah, no, I'm just going, you know, running number scenarios in my head because I know Paramount wouldn't have spent the money unless they knew for a fact they were going to get, you know, return on investment because the Star Trek fans would buy them all over again on
right.
You know, DVD. But we've, you know, Jason has mentioned there's a time difference on how much effects. You know, B5 had 15 minutes, 20 minutes per episode. The original Trek had maybe two.
No, you're right. And really, you know, the bulk of, you go back to the to that original show, a bulk of those visual effects were really stock images of the Enterprise.
Mm-hmm. And they were
bearing
reused. Left,
bearing yeah. right. Yeah, yeah. Entering orbit. Exactly. And just used mm-hmm. over and over again. Yeah. So while they, you know, they changed some of those, and in some cases they even added, you know, like if they rendezvoused with a starship, you know, they would actually show that happening. But even still, that's, that wasn't a lot of time. And yes, you didn't have massive space battles like you had in Babylon 5 or even Deep Space Nine.
Yeah. And like literally the only home video equivalent I can think of that's similar to Babylon 5 is Miami Vice. We had 5 seasons of Miami Vice, episodes that were deeply, deeply intertwined with the popular music that was used in, during those 5 seasons. And I remember people being very upset that Universal was not releasing Miami Vice on DVD. And a lot of us knew that they were taking their time because they knew if they didn't get all of the licensing for them, all of the music cleared up, Miami Vice fans would not buy the DVDs. They observed the fiasco that was WKRP in Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm. Yes, right.
Hacked to shreds and nobody buying the DVDs. So Miami Vice took, I mean, NBC Universal, Universal Studios rather, took an extra 3.5 years to get all of the licensing for all of the songs for all 5 seasons of Miami Vice. There was a rumor that there was one song they couldn't get the rights to, so they redid it. I don't believe it was because I listened to it at the time when it came out, and it sounded like the original to me. But I was happy that Universal realized how important it was to have right. that music in order for right. them to actually sell those DVDs. You know, we don't have a problem with not having B5. But I know people would buy B5 again if there were a re-release. Hell, I'd buy season 3 again if I knew I could get better packaging.
Yeah, right? Huh.
Well, this is Neil from Bowie listening to show 221. I just heard Tim's scandalous Justin Bieber comment, and I mean, I just almost drove off the road. God, that's such a painful thought. But I'm glad he was just kidding. He really was just kidding. Summer, make sure he was just kidding.
Come on, Neil, you've listened to this show long enough. You know I'm deadly serious with everything I say.
Hello, Babylon Podcast. This is Father Beast from Santa, Utah. I was thinking about Talia's Lost Ark, and what if she'd been had her personality erased and then had a previous version of her personality restored from the time before she'd had a relationship with Ivanova. And if Ivanova started trying to restart the relationship again when it didn't happen, we could have accused Voyager of stealing that one, since they so blatantly ripped off Ironheart's shuttle explosion for Kes is doing the same thing. There was, if I don't know if you noticed that.
Yep, noticed it.
Okay.
Oh yeah, you. Yes, I can't remember the actress who played Kes. They were moving her off the series. She basically evolved into a higher dimensional being, and sort of did the whole Ironheart thing and gave them a gift and blasted them another 40,000 light years closer to home and.
I remember that. What was that all about? Never mind. I don't want to know.
Yeah, no, right.
Okay. So I believe we're out of voicemails, but you have emails for us, right?
Yeah, I've got emails, and we're out of voicemails for this batch. Because I promise you, these people don't stop sending us.
But that's a good thing. That's a good thing.
We love it.
Yes.
Thank you. The Functional Nerds Podcast from author-blogger Patrick Hester and musician-blogger John Anelio. Each week, we chat with interesting folks about the things we love, like music, science fiction and fantasy books, movies, and TV shows, even the occasional comic book. Past guests have included Blake Charlton, Lou Anders, Mighty Mer Lafferty, Kirby Crackle, Mike Resnick, James Aang, Peter V. Brett, Kay Kenyon, Neil Clark, Carolyn Crane, and Chris Roberson. New episodes are available every Tuesday on FunctionalNerds.com, or you can subscribe via iTunes by searching for Functional Nerds. That's the Functional Nerds Podcast with Patrick Hester and John Anelio. Yep, he's the guy who sang that George R.R. Martin is not your bitch song.
And what do our fans have for us today?
Well, we've got some emails here. There's no doubt we've got, let me see here. This comes to us from Gary. He sent a link, and I'll have to post this up. It's an interview with Rick Berman on trekweb.com, and it's Rick Berman on Ron Jones fan criticism and Babylon 5. And I just kind of want to read this. Read this one a little bit. The question comes, and it was a question and answer session with Mr. Berman. And it says, here's the question. There was supposedly a rivalry between Star Trek and Babylon 5. Did you know about it? Did you care? Or was that perhaps more between fans of the shows? Berman responds, it was purely a fan thing. There was a time when, I don't know whether it was specifically Straczynski or other people, it was implied that he had pitched an idea similar to DS9 to Paramount and that had been rejected. And that, lo and behold, a year or so later, DS9 came about. The implication being that Michael Piller and I perhaps stole all or part of his idea, which was always amusing to Michael and I because it was completely untrue. We had no knowledge of this gentleman. If he did pitch something to Paramount, we never heard about it. DS9 was a show that was created by Michael and me and Brandon Tartikoff, who was the recent head of Paramount at the time, without any knowledge of Straczynski or of anything that he had ever pitched. So when we were accused of stealing his idea, it was a little sad, but at the same time, a little comical to us. Now, I would also, it's interesting to this, is that, recall our interview with JMS?
Mm-hmm.
And he very, very explicitly said that he was in there in the pitch meeting with network executives and not any writers and not any producers. So the list here, Michael and me and Brandon Tartikoff, who was the recent head of Paramount at the time.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's that's the telling bit right there. You know, Straczynski implied not that Berman or Piller, whoever ripped him off, it's that, you know, his sense is that he pitched it to the network executives. They turned it down, and then they approached the writers and said, hey, what would you think if you did a show like blah? Anyway. All right, here's another message. This comes to us from Tony Massinio. Tony, if I pronounced your last name wrong, I am sorry for that. He writes, hello. First, I must say thank you for doing this show. I have listened since I first became aware of the podcast back when you had JMS on. I have been listening ever since, and I'm finally getting around to writing to thank you. I just got caught up on the last few shows and was intrigued by the petition to the publisher to have the B5 novels reprinted. While the base of B5 fans might be too small for them to justify the expense, perhaps releasing them in an ebook format might be a solution. The cost of the conversion and licensing as compared to the cost of printing, stocking, and shipping might make ebook a format a more attainable goal. I would love to know your thoughts on this idea. Thank you again, and please keep the show going on past Crusade. It is such a rich universe that there can always be something to discuss. Yes, love to have ebooks. I think that would be great.
Definitely. Definitely, definitely, definitely. Hopefully when the Crusade books coming out are done and we can hopefully glean a little bit more about these secret book projects at Synthetic Worlds Publishing. Hint, hint, Jason. Hint.
Yes. Talk about teases.
Yeah, really. They can need a smoke and a beer after them. we can. Jan's correcting me. Publishing 180. Sorry. My fault. Publishing 180. We can find out what they will have coming out and when. I mean, even if they don't tell us what, just give me a ballpark. Tell me we'll have something cool for Christmas. I can live with that.
Yes, but which Christmas?
Sorry, Christmas 2011.
Okay. See, I don't see the glasses half empty. I've seen it as pushed off the table onto the floor in a million pieces.
Wow.
Well, you know.
Jason is saying ballpark, the future. Nice. Thank you, dear. Oh,
yes. Not in the fullness of time?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Professional tease. Professional tease.
I ran out of one. Sorry. Okay. This comes to us from Frank Grant from the UK. Frank writes, "Hi, my late wife was a keen Babylon 5 fan, and back in October 1994, when JMS was visiting Forbidden Planet in London to promote the series, my wife wrote to him with three questions, which he answered in writing on her original piece of paper. One, why change commander? JMS wrote, works for the story. Two, will original commander return? JMS wrote, at some point. Three, will B5 lose the interesting storyline of Sinclair's lost 24 hours memory? JMS wrote, no, this will be explained and expanded on." And that interesting. Very succinct and to the point, but just kind of neat. And thank you for sending this to us, Frank. We do appreciate that. Let's see. We also have, this comes to us from, I just had it here. Here we go. This is the one everybody's been waiting for. This comes to us from Joe Carfley. And Joe, if I pronounce your last name wrong, I apologize. The title of the email is, Tim is out of his mind wrong. The main problem for most spinoffs, they forget they are part of the original world. Too many spinoffs have failed due to not acknowledging the world they came from. Joey from Friends died on the vine due to forgetting about the Friends cast. Most successful spinoffs have guest stars from the past. Frasier had Lilith guest star in season one and often managed her as well as the bar. TNG's only good episode of season one had probably one of its greatest moments with McCoy and Data. Q being on DS9 made us get behind Sisko when he punched Q. Hell, that made him my favorite character due to how much talky-talky Picard did on TNG. Angel season one was basically Buffy season 4.5. That show I'm holding my tongue. You'll have to hold your tongue. That show did amazing when it had guest stars. In season three, it started to flounder due to forgetting about Buffy and wondered more about putting Angel with Cordelia. Successful spinoffs have guest stars, whether it be in the first episode or in episode five. It reminds people why they watched the show in the first place. Honestly, it really doesn't matter if it was stunt casting, since Crusade was going to get canned, no matter if they made Babylon 6. Excuse me. The show was doomed when the AOL talks started, as well as half of TNT not sure what to do with the show. Well, Joe, I appreciate the fact that you're accurate. I am out of my mind, but wrong, I don't know.
You can
go first with the angel, because you.
I can take so many issues with the Buffy and Angel crossovers because they weren't stunt casting; they were intentional crossing of the streams.
I can't say because I never watched Buffy or Angel, so I will accuse myself.
Joss Whedon is my master now. Let's say it that way. I liked Buffy.
Yep.
All right. I thought Angel was so much better than Buffy. I still watch my Angel DVDs. I still watch Angel reruns on TNT if I happen to still be up at 3 o'clock in the morning, which happens far too often. More often than I'd like to admit. And I think Firefly is, 10 times better than Angel. I own all of the Buffy DVDs. I don't think I've watched any Buffy episodes in like at least 3 or 4 years.
Sure.
there was no stunt casting. There were intentional crossing of those storylines because you had to have those characters still interact to come together at the Hellmouth apocalypse at the end of Buffy. It would have been stunt casting for them to all show up at the end. Yeah. If they hadn't been crossing over to each other's universes during those interim, what, four seasons? Yeah, that was not stunt casting. Now, if you want to say stunt casting, you can say that in the final season of Buffy and the next to the final fourth season of Buffy, the fourth season of Angel, what is it, sixth season of Buffy, when the or last season of Buffy, when the recently unemployed crew cast of Firefly showed up. Yeah, okay, I'll give you that. But no, the Buffy and Angel crossing over was definitely not stunt casting.
The Jason Davis posted on the Babylon podcast's comments for the show.
Mm-hmm.
These thoughts, some thoughts on B5 actors appearing on Crusade. The plot of Each Night I Dream of Home required a plague-infected individual to come aboard the Excalibur and infect David Williams. Since it was an important medical undertaking, it makes sense, that the infected individual should be a doctor. Since B5 established a character who was effectively the Surgeon General of the Earth Alliance, and we knew him to be on Earth at the time of infection, why not use that character? I don't think the notion of featuring Dr. Franklin came first. I think the plot dictated a character akin to Franklin, and JMS used him rather than inventing another character to service the plot point. There's no reason the telepath who came to B5 with news of a traitor and divided loyalties had to be Leta. Could have been anyone, but Leta was established. She was a Teep, and that appearance set her up to return in subsequent seasons as Talia's replacement. That's a different situation, but General Haig was meant to be in Severed Dreams. Robert Foxworth wasn't available, so Major Ryan was created to fill the hole, just as Garibaldi's aide fulfilled part of Laurel Takashima's storyline when she left the series after the plot. JMS is a utilitarian writer. If an already existent character fills the bill, use him. If the actor is unavailable, write a new character to replace them, as was done with Garibaldi and Leta in Crusade.
I still think the outtake with Bruce McGill was awesome. His agent double booked him. We had to kill him.
Yeah, whatever. Right. Yeah.
Whatever that line was.
Let me, the three examples that, or two examples that you tossed out here, three examples, are within the Babylon 5 series.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Dr. Franklin showing up, and I guess really, as I said before, part of what I have an issue with is, yeah, partly it's Franklin showing up, but partly how he is, how they bring him on. It's this big to-do. And to me, that's more about, hey, look, we're bringing this character back rather than we need this character because he fits the bill. You know what I'm saying?
And I understand your disdain at that extra long reveal. I don't see them as making it a big deal, as in, look at this character, look who this is, as they were trying to, shall we say, artificially extend the suspense.
For what purpose? I mean, that's the whole thing. See, now, you know, and I was thinking about this, and it makes me wonder whether that is how it is written in the script or if that's something that the director did.
Quoting Jason, I think Stephen First's direction of the scene built it up more than it was in the script. And you have to wonder if that was because they were friends. He was just focusing the spotlight on his buddy.
Well,
and
sure,
that's what that Jason said too. I just think it was drawn out to sort of extend the suspense, but unfortunately, because we didn't have more episodes, it looks like you're playing to the heartstrings. That's
right.
My story.
Yeah, and again, this, you know, from where I sat at the time, I knew B5 was in trouble. I didn't, or not, Crusade was in trouble. didn't know it had been canceled, all, you know, fait accompli. So knowing it was with the perception that it was in trouble, to me, it seemed that bringing Franklin on was a desperate attempt to get eyeballs. And I know it's all about appearances, and you know, we know differently now, but, you know, at the time, there you are. And anyways, so there.
Yep. Okay.
Now, Joe, if we want to talk about all the Star Trek stuff, I will take the task on that, but that's a whole other podcast. I cannot disagree with you more on your examples.
Oh, you have to do the Doctor Who podcast before you do the Star Trek podcast,
yeah,
all right?
Know, right? Yeah, well, see, there's another one. Back to your point, Summer, about like Angel and Buffy, all the different characters appearing on the various Doctor Who episodes from the various seasons work because they're all working in the same general story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're telling a bigger story, and I think that's the difference here. Babylon 5 told its story. Crusade was telling a different story, and then to have some of these characters show up, to me, just didn't – it's like – tell the story without, you know, why are you bringing back things from another story? I guess maybe that's my issue. To me, the universe is so rich, I want to explore more. I don't want to see what I've already seen.
If a call to arms had been made without any reference to the station or the Drock plague on Earth, I could see your argument having more validity than I give it credence for right now, because Call to Arms served as the pilot for Crusade, whether or not TNT wants to admit it or not, it did.
Right.
Because Call to Arms is that link between Babylon 5 and Crusade, it cannot be avoided. I don't think it should have been avoided. I think really that was a bad call on TNT's part. Whether or not that would have given us another 5, 10, 13 episodes, I don't know.
But I don't think so. I think the issues with Crusade's all too brief life have little to do with the story itself.
No, TNT wanted Baywatch in space. Duh.
Right.
Right. So yeah. But yeah, I don't treat the crossover characters, I don't view them as harshly as you do, so we will continue to agree to disagree on that
yes,
point
we will.
For many years.
Yes.
Yeah, we'll be 80 years old arguing Day of the Dead and Crusade stunt casting.
Damn it, Summer.
Listen to me, you whippersnapper. There's no way that was stunt casting. Where's my cane? Whack!
Somebody drew chalk around my walker. Stop. Damn kids.
Here, have a comet candy. Okay. All right, I think we're done with voicemail.
Yes. Yes,
we're done with
round.
Feedback. Everybody, feel free to chime in, because I know there's a lot more opinions out there. And like I said, show Brett a little love. Support something he says, argue against something he says, just show the love. And the way you do that is visiting the website, babylonpodcast.com. Come on by, add your comments to our discussions there. Farpointforums.com. Join in the arguments over there. Email babylonpodcast@gmail.com. Send in your messages. If they are argumentative enough, Tim will read them just because he likes starting arguments. And it is a hobby, and you do it well. And of course, call in your voicemails in between Gary and Neil. That phone number is 206-338-2259. That's 206-338-2259.
The year that nobody from Slice's Sci-Fi showed up. Oh, wait a minute. Summer.
And we'll see you next time on the other side of the stunt festival.